Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Tabor Bajar, the founder of Autism Brain Empowerment. Tabor is a TEDx speaker, award-winning author, and she holds degrees in dentistry and bioethics from the University of Bristol, where she earned the Clinical Research Prize in 2013. Drawing from her personal journey after her son's developmental regression, she developed the 7-Step Autism Action Plan, a science-based approach to help parents reduce autism symptoms through environmental changes at home. Her mission is to empower millions of families worldwide by highlighting autism's epigenetic nature and fostering real progress for autistic children. She is the best-selling author of Unlock Autism and co-author of Evolve and Conquer, and she has received prestigious awards, including the 2024 National Mental Health Care Award and the Hampshire Business Awards for Community Health and Wellbeing Impact. Welcome to the podcast, Tabor.
Thank you for having me.
I watched your TED Talk this morning, and it was really interesting. Could you explain to us a little bit more about your journey?
So I have a 7.5-year-old son. And when he was born, he didn't really have any symptoms of autism. Everything was fine. He was developing normally. He was an early walker, like 11 months, 5 days. He walked then. At 18 months, he knew his colors. He could say hi, bye. Eye contact was great. He could feed himself, reaching all of his milestones. Then at 20 months old, he had an autism skills regression. So what that meant is that within about 4 weeks of him having the autism skills regression, he stopped being able to speak, like understand words, like he lost words. He stopped being able to get off the ground, so he could no longer walk anymore, like walk independently as like he could before. He had like a huge sleep regression, so that he would just stay awake and hyperactive in the middle of the night, and the next day seem completely like normal and like not tired. He had started having a sensory overwhelm to sounds and was very sensitive to sounds. So he started having all of these new symptoms that he never had before. And I have two sisters who are teachers, and they told me that if a child has skills and then loses them, that's a clear symptom of autism, like a skills regression. So I went to my GP and I told my GP, everything that happened to my son. They looked at him and they're like, yep, he probably does have autism. We're going to make some referrals for speech and language therapy and a few other things. And then you'll hear back from the pediatrician about 3 years to give you a formal diagnosis. But if you think he has autism, the nursery think he's autism, I'm looking at him, I can tell like his behavior is a little bit strange. He probably does have autism, but it's like a 3-year waiting list for the official diagnosis, and we'll give you some therapies. And then he started some of the therapy. So after like a couple of months on the waiting list, he had speech and language therapy, and they discharged him. They discharged him after the first appointment because they said he couldn't focus well enough for their appointments. And he had like a physiotherapy appointment and an occupational therapy appointment every 8 weeks. And they often got cancelled. And it was just like, and after like a few months like that, and speaking to the therapist and telling them, you know, showing them videos of my son's now doing this, he's now doing this, he's now stimming. And basically they just like, all they did was they were more focused on limiting my expectations of him rather than actually trying to help him. So every time I showed them a video, oh, he's now doing this, he's now doing that, they were like, oh yes, that can happen, autism, oh yes, that's a symptom of autism, well that's just autism. They'd already written him off. But I used to be a dentist. I have a degree in dentistry from the University of Bristol, and I learned about neuroplasticity and how malleable and changeable your brain is in the first 5 years. So I was like, my son is, you know, he's like 2.5, and they've already written him off like completely, that he's going to be like this for the rest of his life. But his brain still has such a big growth spot, which is going to happen. And I don't think the help he needs is going to come from them. So then I actually won the clinical research prize when I was at the University of Bristol. So I knew all about how to look at research papers, how to how to find out information and assess whether it is, you know, good quality information or not good quality research. So I started learning about like what actually helped, like what could actually be the causes of autism for my son. Because the explanation I was getting was, oh, he's having this autism skills regression because it's autism is genetic. And I was like, okay, well, if it was genetic, why wasn't he born like this? He wasn't like this in the first 20 months of his life. He was interactive. He had eye contact. He had speech. He had, you know, all of these normal things. He had no signs of autism in the first 20 months of his life. So, and autism is based on symptoms, like behaviors. So it's like, he clearly didn't have autism when he was born. And they're like, oh no, he always had it in his genes, but he started showing symptoms later. But it was just like an explanation I wasn't that happy with. That they were kind of like ignored, like there could have been an environmental reason for his autism. So I started looking into autism more, and I learned about epigenetics, which is the ability to turn on and off genes based on environmental influences. So I started learning about like epigenetic factors for autism. I like completely changed my son's diet and lifestyle, and like habits at home, and you know, so much. And he started going on track again, and by 4 and a half he was like pretty much like really, like he was now conversational. It was a really good recovery. People around me saw this massive transformation in him, where he used to flap his hands, he used to stim, he used to be like have a complete meltdown with small sounds, and all of that had stopped. And they asked me how I did it, like how did I help my son. So I started helping the people around me for free. And then I realized that this information needs to be more well-known publicly. So I wrote my book, Unlock Autism, and offered like autism parent coaching services from then.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much for the background, Tabor. It's interesting you talk about epigenetics. I follow the work of Dr. David Sinclair, and also read the Life Force book by Tony Robbins and Peter Diamandis. I'm fans of all three of those people, but in Life Force, they talk about the developments in the study of epigenetics, mainly to do with longevity. Now, up until recently, it was thought that genetics played a key role in longevity, but it's now thought that they may not be as decisive as was thought, and that you can actually change or overcome genetics with lifestyle choices or exercise or whatever, other means, and that they're not as deterministic as was previously thought.
Absolutely. So your genes are not your destiny. Your destinies are your choices. Like you could absolutely change your destiny through your choices. So your genes are not your destiny, basically. Your genes are not your destiny. You can absolutely change things for your life, for yourself and for your family, if you make different lifestyle choices.
Yeah, it's really important that distinction that's come about recently, that genetics are not as important as was previously thought. I've also heard you talk about environmental toxins. With those, how do you begin to assess an individual to find out, you know, everyone's different. So how do you begin to work with an individual and try to assess what possible environmental toxins could be affecting them?
So everyone who joins my program, I do a really thorough history of them to find out like what their son was like when they were born, what was their pregnancy like, what was their birth, what was their labor like, any family events that happened, and did they move homes, did he start a new nursery? You know, I do a really big thorough, what are they like when the seasons change, and it's like a really big thorough history, and then from that I determine what autism switches they have. So an autism switch is anything that can increase or decrease your child's autism symptoms. So it kind of acts like a dimmer switch, which is why TED Talk is about. So so I call like a whole list of all the like known autism dimmer switches, which is what I call them. And I just like try to get as much information I can out through the history. And it's absolutely different for each child. So for one child, you know, you can recommend something and it, you know, is brilliant for them and a child is transformed. And then for another child, they will do the exact same thing and it hasn't worked on them. Like they, like there's no change at all. So so epigenetic factors are different for each child. So how I learn about it for the clients I work with, it's all through the history.
Yes, and I remember in your TED talk, you mentioned for some children, it could be, for example, iPads.
Screens, yeah, absolutely.
And I think you said it could cause fright, flight or freeze mode.
Yeah.
Which then could bring on or trigger autism.
I absolutely have worked with some parents who have told me, like, when their autistic child is with a screen and has spent too long with a screen, their behavior is worse that day. They are more hyperactive. Obviously sleep is disturbed. If sleep is disturbed, the next day they have no, you know, poorer focus. They are less engagement, less words. So screen is, I would say definitely is one of the autism dimmer switches for children. Not for all children, but for some, definitely.
Yes. It sounds like the key is finding out what the trigger or triggers are for the individual.
Yeah, dimmer switches.
I guess it's difficult to work out what the trigger is, especially if you're a busy parent rushing around. And I guess that's where you need expert guidance to find out what that trigger is for the child.
It's often more than one thing as well. So very rarely, like I've had one client in the past where they made a massive transformation so quickly and it was just putting the child on a ketogenic diet. So as soon as we changed their diet to a ketogenic diet, he had words. He was sleeping the night. He was no longer wet in the bed. He was speaking sentences. He could read. It was like a miracle for that child. But that's quite rare. So very rare is it just one thing for one child. It's usually a multiple of autism dimmer switches for children.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit more or give a few examples of some of the transformational things that you've seen?
Yeah, so this is my like bread and butter, so I see them every single day. One recent one, which I am going to record a video testimonial for tomorrow with the parent, and that one is about the basically this little boy. He's 5.5 years old. He actually had more ADHD symptoms than autism, so he had a bit of a sensory issue sometimes, but his main problem was aggression. So again, that fight, flight and freeze mode was aggression and like hyperactivity, poor focus and huge meltdowns and eloping. So those were his symptoms, like his main symptoms. And his parents were incredibly sweet and soft-spoken. And his little brother was incredibly sweet and soft-spoken. And that little boy was very explosive to the point where when I was going through my 7-step, or that they joined my program last December, well, in January, they joined the January program, and we were going through the 7-step autism action plan. The first step of the 7-step plan is optimize oxytocin, so like bonding with your child, because if you can increase oxytocin in a child, it helps them to learn new skills more. So this parent said to me, Deba, I know it sounds really bad, but I'm scared of my child. Every time I interact with them, they explode. Like it's a violent explosion. And he's only 5.5 years old, by the way. And it's a violent explosion. And I'm scared of him. Like I kind of just want to leave him alone. Whenever I interact with him, it's explosive. And to now, so they just finished the program in August, and the mum has said that like she feels like her life is a dream now. So he is so calm. He is so cooperative. He's listening. He's no longer eloping. And it's just been a massive transformation. So throughout the 6 months we were working, like 6-7 months we were working together at the beginning, once we had actually changed his diet a little bit, she was like, he's a little bit calmer. Now that when I put his school uniform on in the morning, he's no longer hitting and kicking me. Otherwise, every day I used to begin the day with him hitting and kicking me. And like that changed once we changed our diet. But once we did the heavy metal gut detox, all the disgusting heavy metals were coming out of him. And he was doing like disgusting, smelly, giant poos throughout the gut detox. And afterwards, like she was like, I can't believe this is my son now. And it's completely transformed their lives. So I'm really happy for that family. But there's actually just like loads of different transformations where like kids are talking more, they're conversational, they have a better relationship with their siblings now. I had another child where the other parent where they said their child now recognizes other people in their family, so they now can interact with their grandmother and grandfather now. And before it was only ever like acknowledging the mum and dad, but now they have like it's opening up their world more. So it's a really rewarding job. Like it's amazing, really, like the transformations.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And for non-autistic people, environment plays a big role too. For example, where you work, your work environment can have a big role on your mood and your productivity. So it makes complete sense what you're saying, especially with children, I would think.
Absolutely. Also, in terms of like for children, their detox pathways, which is like how we get toxins out of our body, they are not mature until the child is at least 10 years old. So from 0 to 10, or like from pre-birth, like while they are still a fetus and not born yet, those detox pathways are not mature. So they are very vulnerable to environmental toxins. So they until the child is 10, then they are mature. But these days we have so many environmental toxins around us, like things that we're spraying, health and beauty products, you're washing your hands with soap, which are perfumed. So they interfere with your hormones. And for sensitive children, especially all children who don't have mature detox pathways, this is building up in their bodies. So it absolutely has an effect, a epigenetic effect for everyone.
Yes. I know you've got a book that talks about this subject matter. Can parents who are beginning this journey work solely with the book, or do they need to connect with you online? Can you tell us a bit more about the book, please?
So the book is called Unlock Autism. It's available from all like major bookstores, obviously Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, Waterstones, all the major bookshops. And it's a really good starting point. And it's, explains a whole 7-step autism action plan, so parents knows what this pretty much involves. The program is more comprehensive. So if you are interested in joining the program, I run a free monthly webinar every month. You can find the details on how to register for this on my website, autismbrainempowerment.com. And that will tell you how to register for the webinar. And you can learn more about the program and decide if you would like to join or not. So the program is more comprehensive, but I do get a lot of families message me saying, they're so grateful that they've done actions from the book and their child has improved. And often these are children with autism who have a developmental delay. So they've had years of their child not changing, of like complete stagnant progress to now improvement. So that's still good.
And for parents who are just beginning their journey, potentially with a potentially autistic child, and they may be worried, what do you recommend is the best way that they actually begin to equip themselves with more knowledge in the areas you're discussing?
The book is really good, and my webinar is really good. So, the webinar is free. The book is a few pounds on Amazon. The audiobook is completely free on my YouTube channel, which is Autism Brain Empowerment. That's my YouTube handle. I've put the audiobook for free there. I think for my advice for parents who are beginning to see signs of autism in their child, and they are getting similar sort of experience from the NHS and from the school system and the NHS therapies, is that to realize that the answer to help your child and the transformation that you want your child to have, it's very, very, very unlikely to come from the overstretched NHS and school system. So and there's no one in the world who loves your child more and who would do more for that child and who would have the biggest impact on that child's life than the parent. My business is called Autism Brain Empowerment because it aims to give the power back to the parents. So instead of being told all the time, oh, wait till you get your official diagnosis. Oh, wait till you your child gets an EHCP at school. It's a 2-year process. Wait for this, wait for that. It's giving the power back to the parents because you're told that parents are told early years intervention is so important, and then we're told to wait all the time. So this is really aiming to give the power back to parents. So I think my advice to parents would be to know that the transformation you're looking for is very, very, very unlikely to come from the overstretched NHS and school system. And the person who will help their child the most is the parent.
Yes. And I remember you saying that it could take 3 years for authorities to do a diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 years is quite common. And even at the diagnosis appointment, a lot of parents will like be waiting for the diagnosis because they have the false impression that once they get the diagnosis, then that will unlock so many more services for them. But that doesn't really happen. So after the formal diagnosis appointment, you just get given a leaflet from like Autism Hampshire or like a local autism charity about where to get support from. But you could access the support from Autism Hampshire before you even had, you know, before you even having a formal diagnosis. So often the appointment will just end, the diagnosis appointment will just end with just being given the leaflet.
Yes. One of my friends has got an autistic child and it's taken them so long to access services. And now the parent has been allocated some classes that they go to, but it's taken so long.
You know, one of my main criticisms of those classes is that all they do is they aim to educate the parent to know what are the typical signs and symptoms of autism and how to make maybe sensory accommodation things for your child, like, you know, get noise cancelling headphones, you know, have a cool down space for your child. If they're having a meltdown, they can calm them down there. But it doesn't really tackle the root cause of the issue of, you know, trying to get your child, like parents now knowing how to get their child how to talk or to decrease the meltdowns completely. So it's very much a band-aid approach for those parent classes.
And in the future, do you think that perhaps the NHS might be interested in adopting some of your methods and that you can actually perhaps even work with them? Is that something that you think might be possible in the future?
I'd be happy to. But all this information is absolutely available to the NHS because my work is completely public. And like everything I that's part of the programme has all been proven with like lots of scientific literature and all like the latest research. It's just the NHS is quite a political system and there's loads of things that do work from a health perspective, but that are not part of the NHS for reasons that I do not know. So, for example, a very common example would be, you know, it's well known that if you want to lose weight, like a really effective free method is intermittent fasting. So, but the, you know, the GP will never talk to you about intermittent fasting because they are only allowed to talk about things that are on the NHS website. And they will just talk about calories in and calories out. And, you know, it's very hard to estimate your calories when you're pouring in your plate. So it's kind of like bad advice in the first place. And even though intermittent fasting is so well known by the public, it's really well proven through scientific literature, the NHS is just too slow to catch up. Maybe it's I think it's probably a political decision, but it is what it is with that. So, you know, all this information is completely available, but I just don't think they have the resources to deploy this. They kind of like want to wash their hands from you and say stuff like, you know, it's autism, bye-bye. This is something you're going to have to deal with rather than trying to, you know, teach everyone this program or, you know, help them find what their autism dimmer switches are. Like the staff who work for the NHS are absolutely amazing, obviously, but it's the political system that's behind it.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. It's just not really a very reactive system.
Absolutely not a reactive, nimble system.
Changing things could be slow. It could be like trying to change course of an ocean-going liner as an analogy. Hopefully things will be better in the future with the NHS and it will become more agile and nimble, but who knows?
Yeah, with the NHS, every single person I know who works for the NHS will just say every year it's getting worse. So I don't know if there's going to be a big turnaround or if it will just continue to get worse every year.
It's a shame, isn't it, that the people in the system are seeing it get worse every year and not better.
Yeah, I feel like it's a completely broken system. Like everyone pays so much money in taxes. yet. And like, you know, VAT, you know, all the hidden taxes, like even paying for parking and things like that all goes into the same pot. But, you know, you don't get to see a doctor the same day. You don't really, you know, you don't really get a lot of value back from that system. So it just seems to be getting broken every single year. I think there's just so much waste in the NHS. I think people who work within the NHS or will work within any government sector will say that, like, there's so much waste. Like, I think the gigantic scandals of buying so much PPE, like expired PPE, during the COVID pandemic was just crazy. It wasn't like hundreds of billions of pounds or something. Don't quote me on the number, but it was it was hit the news about that the amount of money the government had spent on expired PPE, and there's literally no accountability. So it's just, you know, I think there's just a lot of waste there, and it just seems to be getting, that actual services to people are getting worse each year.
Yes, and I guess some of the people in the system can't really speak out against it either.
No, they can't talk about it, no. Even stuff like chiropractic treatment. Chiropractors work, absolutely, from a health perspective, can completely change people's lives, but they don't offer it in the NHS. Not because they don't know about it, but it's just they don't offer it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the subject of the NHS is actually a worldwide topic because, I mean, I get into discussions with Americans, for example, and people from other countries. And, you know, they're always questioning, people around the world always questioning healthcare and how they do things, how other people do things. And the NHS is obviously famous worldwide. So it is something that comes up and they want to know how the NHS does things. Is it good? Is it bad? And with your own methods, can I ask what sort of success rates do you see?
So for people who complete the program, they all see an improvement because the program's very, very comprehensive. So it's like once we find out what your child's autism dimmer switches are, you see an improvement. For some children, there's a massive transformation and it can be very fast and it's very difficult to know which kids are going to respond like that. But so there's like a few markers, like I think that kind of show me that their child is more likely to have a fast response. But in general, it's very difficult to know that. But where it's such a comprehensive program that the course is 6 months, but it will often take parents like, you know, 1 to 2 years to do everything that's in the program. They will see an improvement because it's so comprehensive.
And do they need to be local to you or can they work with you online if they're in other countries?
No, I absolutely have a few international people on each cohort.
Okay, that's great. So wrapping up, it's been really great talking to you and hearing about your work. I'd like people to see your TED Talk. I found that really interesting. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Also, for people that want to contact you direct, how can they do that?
Sure. I think the best way to contact me would be through my website, which is autismbrainempowerment.com. My TED Talk is linked on my website as well. And how to contact me and speak to me live, it's all on the website. So autismbrainempowerment.com. But I can send this to you and you can link on the show notes as well.
Great. I will do that. And are you on social media as well?
Yes. So all my handles are Autism Brain Empowerment. So I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, I'm on lots of different social media platforms, pretty much all of them. I'm most active on Instagram and then TikTok and I guess then LinkedIn, which is at Dave Babajar.
Brilliant. And well done for being on Instagram, because I know that's one of the most popular platforms and I'm not on it yet. I haven't ventured that far. So well done for being on there. Thanks again for coming and discussing your work. I think there's been a lot of value for the listeners in this episode. And I just really want to thank you again for coming and talking to us about your work and research. It's been really good talking to you.
All right. Thanks for having me, Phil. Really nice speaking to you too.
Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.